Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Making stuff is hard, especially in the entertainment world where big egos, bigger budgets, and just plain bad luck can make things go horribly wrong. And we're going behind the scenes of these disastrous, never-ending, and often dangerous productions to find out why it was a shit show.
Happy holidays, everyone. This is It Was a Shit Show. I am Ian, joined by my sorority sisters,
woo,
Clint and Ray.
Woo! Hey, what's up?
Put your top back on, Clint.
That's my creepy, the call's coming from inside the house, breathing voice.
Right, you could do this just the very first phone call, you'd be like, oh my God. So much to say.
It's a lot. It's a lot, people.
Here we go.
Let's get into it. But forewarning. So I have COVID. I'm getting over it. So we are recording this remotely. So it might sound a little different. Just FYI for everybody. Okay. Well, earlier this year, we did an episode about misleading trailers. One of those movies that came up was today's topic, today's film. Looking into it, I discovered it was a shit show.
No.
No, what? Yeah.
It went perfectly fine, and that's what we're going to talk about today, is how just wonderfully went off without a hitch.
No
without
problem. Today's episode is going to be 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was just a fine show.
It was a fine show. So I held on to it for this holiday season. Today, let's talk the 2006 remake of Black Christmas.
Is this a slasher film?
Well, I would hope not. You know, I wanted real characters and to deal with some of the family thematics or elements. And I like the horror movies where I think it might happen or it's a situation I know. So I'm trying to shoot for something a little more. You know me, I don't want to be pretentious about it. And if nobody goes to this, you know, I thought I had themes in Willard and no one goes and you just feel embarrassed and stupid.
Okay, Clint, you have anything to share for your closet?
Yeah, I brought two items. So the first one I thought might be a little bit just kind of fun, especially for you two, since our annual holiday party that you two unfortunately had to miss, I wore my my holiday sweater. It's my Scream Ghostface holiday sweater. And it's got lights and sounds. So there's some lights.
What does it
there's
say?
There's some sounds. It's like, well, it says, he sees you when you're sleeping, and it's Ghostface. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, it's got some sounds too. Like there's some slasher sounds.
Oh, I just screaming.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my holiday sweater. And the other one is a little bit more sentimental. So both the first Black Christmas and the remake had Andrea Miller in it, who was also in My Big Fat Greek Wedding 1, 2, and 3. I am of Greek ancestry, and so I found this old dagger that my grandfather brought from Greece. It's like straight up like iron and shit. This got the cool sound ready. So that's unsheathing it, and then here, I'm going to put it back. It sounds so cool.
Wait, that's
damn,
so rad.
It just really, it just actually sounds like that?
Yeah.
That's the most epic unsheathing.
Yeah, that sound like a sound effect. That sound like you're pushing a button to make that sound effect.
No, it's rad. That's for real. Like, here we go, ready? Here's unsheathing. And let's put it back.
Whoa, damn.
Wow, so sometimes movies are correct.
Yeah.
Right? Jesus. So yeah, so this I got from my Greek grandfather. And I figure since we're talking about a slasher movie, why not pull out a dagger?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, look, that's a little bit of a stretch, but I'm on board now.
Okay, good.
So that was the actress that you're talking about was
Andrea Martin.
Andrea Martin.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She was one of the sorority sisters in the first.
Correct.
And then she was like the house mom in the remake.
Correct.
And she's the aunt. Oh, she's the aunt in My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Yep.
Okay, okay.
And she's also the makeup artist for Steve Martin's character in
Only Murders.
Yes.
Yeah, Only Murders.
Okay,
yeah.
So Ian.
Andrea Martin, thank you.
Ian pointed that out to me, and I was like, oh, yeah, like I love her, but I didn't put together that she was the aunt in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, so that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Cool, cool. Well, starting with the original, we'll talk about that real quick. To kind of give us a basis of where this remake goes. Spoiler alerts for all three of these movies going forward. If you haven't seen them, we're going to talk about them in detail and reveal the ending and the twists and whatnot.
If you haven't seen them, you don't need to. We'll tell you about it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go into that.
And if you're going to see any of them, just do yourself a favor and just see the first one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Black Christmas is a Canadian-made film from 1974 based on the urban legend of the babysitter and the man upstairs, which is...
I thought that was where... I was like, is this the origin story of the whole... Because, like, people would tell that story when you were younger. They're like, the call's coming from inside the house, like where the babysitter's getting creepy calls.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that where this comes from?
No, no. So, okay. So like, that was an urban myth before the movie.
Okay, so this, they're just basing it on that.
Yes,
okay,
yes. Okay. And that, like, basically the babysitter is left alone with the kids, and then she gets creepy phone calls. The cops trace the call and they say it's coming from inside the house. And then she runs out. And depending on the version of the story, the kids don't or do get out. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's based
on
that.
In our version, the kids get out okay.
In our version.
Yeah.
The script was first written by Roy Moore. Then Timothy Bond did a quick rewrite to have it take place at a university. Lastly came Texan Bob Clark. He rewrote it again, but uncredited. If you look at the credits, it just says Roy Moore. And he made it less of a slasher film and making the characters a lot smarter. So they're not just meat to be slaughtered.
I mean, that's surprising. Because I feel like the characters in this were very dumb in all iterations of it. They were the smartest in the 1970s version.
Yeah, the smart. Well.
But I was still screaming like, bitch, get out of the house! Yeah. Like, as per usual.
Yeah.
Okay, so for those who haven't seen it, a group of sorority girls are slowly killed off. Really slowly.
Yeah, painfully slow.
Yeah.
It was the 70s, you guys. It was the 70s.
They're slowly killed off without the others noticing. After each kill, a demented man named Billy calls the house speaking gibberish, mentioning someone named Agnes, and coincidentally repeating the things the women have said recently. The cops get involved. They trace the phone call, leading to the first ever movie utterance of "the call is coming from inside the house." So that's where this is. It got really popular because of this.
Yeah.
The movie leads you to believe that the last surviving woman's boyfriend is the killer. But as the case seems closed, the camera pans away from the house as the phone rings again, kind of leaving it like an ambiguous ending of whether or not the last woman that survived actually gets killed after that.
Oh, no, that's not ambiguous. She for sure died.
Yeah.
You don't know. Maybe it was a telemarketer.
I cannot believe.
Maybe it was someone calling back.
I cannot believe the police just left her there. They're like, oh, it's fine. She's sleeping. Just leave her here by herself.
Yeah, she's good.
She's all good.
Yeah. They just, all right, should we just get out of here? Yeah, sure. Let's take off. Yeah, she's all right.
Job well done. We got to take care of these seven bodies.
Case closed. Oh, we'll come back for him tomorrow. He's tired.
I will say, though, the hints about, like, making you think that it was her boyfriend were really well done, because I legit was like, oh yeah, it's her like creepy ass boyfriend.
See, I love horror movies, and when you told me we were going to talk about Black Christmas, I'm like, yes, I haven't seen this one yet. I'm really stoked to see it, because in every like countdown or top 10 or whatever, like top whatever list, like Black Christmas always shows up for one reason or another. So I'm like, all right, cool, sweet, I finally get to see this, I have a good reason to watch it. And like with other horror movies, like, you know who the villain is, at least by the end of it. And that's kind of like the fun of it, right? Too, like, there's like a whodunit kind of thing, you know, unless it's like a Freddy or, you know, or Michael Myers or whatever. But then we find out, like, yeah, they did a really good job of making us think it's a boyfriend, but there's no like twist. It ends up just being like,
was it
some fucking weirdo in the attic.
Like,
and who knows why? Like, there was no like closure. Satisfying, like, yes, there was no satisfying closure to it. So I liked it for what it did for the horror genre, mm-hmm. right? But at the same time, like, the ending was kind of dumb, right? Mm-hmm. And it does not get better. It does not get better with the second or third one.
No, it does not.
But I do appreciate what it did for the horror genre of, like, you know, it was a whodunit slasher, put the audience in the POV of the killer, which I thought was great. But weird ending.
I think that ending makes it more interesting than the others, because again, it is just a phone call. It doesn't mean that it's Billy that time, but yeah, you never know.
Yeah, it's like the top in Inception doing a little wibble wobble.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So okay, the film was made for under $700,000 and it made around $2 to $3 million. So it's pretty definitely good. Become a cult classic. Okay. According to Bob Clark, someone approached him asking if he'd make a sequel. Clark said no, but if he did, it would take place on Halloween. The person that asked him was who?
John Carpenter.
Yeah. Yeah. John Carpenter was so inspired by Black Christmas. Clark states, in no way did Carpenter steal his idea. He was simply influenced.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like he does feels no ill will towards Carpenter for taking that same idea and making a seminal classic,
yeah.
if you want to say.
Wait, what movie are we talking about?
Halloween.
Oh, Halloween.
Halloween.
Yes. Okay.
I've never seen any of the Halloweens.
Yeah. So.
Don't come at me, Clint. Clint, what's that face? Don't give me that face.
Not even the first one?
No, I've never seen any of them.
Okay. All right. That's okay. We're still friends. It's okay. I'm sure there's plenty of things that I haven't seen that you're like, what? So it's okay. It's all right.
It's just look at it as an opportunity.
There you go. See, I can't talk too much because really I've only seen the first two. And then they came out with the trilogy, like, the last couple of years. And I only saw two out of those three. So I'm still like not even probably 25% of all the Halloween movies, but the first one is definitely worth a watch.
So, okay. So general thoughts on the original Black Christmas. I would say that the movie is interesting in that it's really great at giving you a sense of dread.
Oh yeah, it's very intense.
Well, I mean, it was like it's intense. It's just
like
very,
it's a
like
slow burn, but there's kind of that feeling of like foreboding where you're just like, oh god,
just,
where is
you're
he
kind of
like,
off yeah. You're not put at ease ever. You're just constantly like, oh god, what's gonna happen?
It's the horror equivalent of taking one of those rubber popper things, you know, that you flip inside out and put
waiting
on like,
for
the
it
ground and waiting for it to pop. It's the horror equivalent of that.
Like, you know it's going to happen, but it still surprises you when it does. Yeah.
Yep. I thought, man, like some of his kills are like, man, that dude is lucky that kill actually worked. Like when the house mother's like looking in the attic for the cat and he throws like that meat hook thing from the attic, like on the cord, and like got her like right in the neck, like just perfectly to string her up. Like, that's luck. Like, that's some straight up murder luck.
Yeah. I was actually pretty impressed by a lot of the like filmmaking techniques they use, like the POV stuff with the killer. I was like, how are they doing this? Like, how are they doing this with a big ass film camera, a big ass 70s film camera? Like, I was actually pretty impressed by that.
Yeah, like when he starts to climb up the side of the house.
Yeah,
I thought that was my same thought too. It's like, how the fuck are they going to do this with this giant camera?
And when he climbs down from the attic, yeah, too. Yeah,
that was actually pretty creepy. I don't know if like had there been any movies before then that had used that same technique of like that.
Some old 70s GoPros.
Yeah, right, exactly. So yeah, I mean, it had like. It was interesting, but it had a lot of the problems that a 70s movie has, where it's just like very slow and pretty like boring at times. But
yeah,
it is the best of the three, which is like shocking.
Yeah.
It's shocking, you guys, that this is the best of these three movies.
I was still kind of jet lagged when we watched it. But it was kind of like I kept kind of zonking out from times because there's just stretches of like nothing happening.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I kept hitting him. I'm like, if I have to watch this movie, you have to watch this
so
movie.
So do you.
But I think that it is very interesting in its way of setting up suspense. But I do, as much as I don't like horror movies and as much as Halloween is the crown jewel of horror movies, Halloween does take this concept and make it better, especially with like music. It's just like it kind of takes it and goes, okay, what's the next evolution of that, and it is better.
Yeah, for sure.
In 1983, Bob Clark would again make a cult classic film. Anybody?
Oh,
I don't know. What year?
1983.
I'm gonna say Animal House.
I have no idea.
A Christmas Story.
Oh my God. Okay. Okay.
I have seen A Christmas Story so many times, but I cannot tell you which order the scenes go in.
Yeah.
I think I've said this before.
I think that's kind of the point of that movie, though, is that it's just a bunch of random Christmas memories like smooshed together.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, I think it's very interesting that he wrote and directed two very, very different cult classic Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
One heartfelt comedy about a family, and the other one about a bunch of sorority girls getting murdered.
Exactly.
It's way two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Okay. Jumping all the way up to 2005, writer-director Glenn Morgan is approached about doing a remake to Black Christmas. His last film was Willard. Does anybody remember this movie?
Was that the Crispin Glover one about the rats?
Yes.
Yeah.
About a man who befriends all the rats inside of his dad's mansion, and the rats start doing his bidding to take revenge on his abusive family.
That just sounds like how Crispin Glover lives his life. Like, is that a biopic?
Also, I was like, that just sounds like some of the film crew just followed around Crispin Glover.
Yeah. Yeah. Going over to Crispin Glover's house, look at his horde of rat minions.
So that was itself a remake, but it was kind of well received, but it bombed. It did not do well. So he decided to take the Black Christmas gig because it would be like a sure thing. Just a solid horror movie. Cool. I can make this, then go on to do bigger things. Throughout the documentaries on the DVD, like the making of documentaries, okay, studio approved documentaries, Morgan is very candid about making such a straightforward horror film because he is not a fan and basically he's selling out.
Yeah.
Like he flat out is basically saying, I took this for the money and so I can get a better job.
He just like looks straight into the camera. Listen, everybody, this movie is shit. I know. It's fine. I just needed a paycheck. Now that we're on the same page, let's go.
Wait. So Glenn Morgan is not a fan of the horror genre at all, but he's just basically like, okay, yeah, I'll take on this horror movie just for the check.
Not so much the genre itself, just that he doesn't like straightforward stuff. So if you're gonna do horror, like
a slasher movie.
Yeah. He wants it to be more psychological. Like, he doesn't want it to be so over the top. It's not about the kills for him.
But, like, then why didn't he make it that way?
Yeah. I mean, as a director, aren't you able to do that?
Okay. Let's get into that.
Okay.
So, Morgan...
I'm so confused over here.
So, Morgan heard Bob Clark speak at an event and was surprised to hear that Clark did have an origin for Billy, the killer.
Mm.
But he never wants to reveal it.
Okay.
He's just keeping that to himself. So Morgan decides that he wants, the thing that he wants to do is expand on Billy.
No, that's terrible.
And he modeled his version after Edmund Kemper.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Jenny Ray, quick.
Well, yeah.
Summary of Ed Kemp.
That makes sense now based on what the story of Billy. But yeah, Ed Kemper was a psychopath, basically. And he had like an obsession with his mom. He ended up killing his mom. I think he ended up doing sexual acts to his mother's corpse posthumously. But then he killed a bunch of sorority girls, right? That was like his thing.
Not that I know of. I think he was just a serial killer. I don't know. I don't listen to true crime. You do.
Yeah, well, no, he was a serial killer. Okay, now I'm going to look this up.
Ed Kemper, you said?
Yeah, he had a thing with his, it was a thing with his mom, though. Yeah, college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, the co-ed
killer. The co-ed killer, yeah. Oh,
there you
look,
go.
Look, I have one skill set, which is to know about serial killers. Don't question crime. Me.
It comes in handy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a lot. Look, I'm still alive, so I'm doing great. I've not been serial killed yet.
Yes.
I
think there's a direct correlation there. So I think you're right.
So, okay, that makes sense that he wanted to base Billy on Ed Kemper, or that he based Billy on Ed Kemper, because there's a lot of similarities. But the whole story of Billy and his origin story and the whole thing with his mom and like all of it is so bad. Like it is the worst part of the movie by far.
For sure.
And I found myself going, I didn't need to know this. Like I actually liked that in the first movie that it was like, who is this killer? You don't know. You never find out.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's not about the psychology of like what's going on with him. And so like when the first thing that they do is like they're going to explore this whole backstory, but then it was so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh,
it's the polar opposite of it.
You're right. Like we didn't need to see really any of that. They could have just told us about it. We still would have been creeped out. But I don't know what the point was to make him a jaundiced kid and to make him like super bright yellow.
That was
okay.
So
all right. So hold on. So for those who have not seen it, unlike the original, Billy's backstory is completely told to us, like every step.
Everything.
Where his
Everything.
Abusive mother rapes him.
Yes.
And
yes.
She gives birth to a daughter. He then murders his mom. Bakes her flesh into cookies for whatever reason.
That scene was disgusting.
And then their house is eventually turned into a sorority house.
Mm-hmm.
A decade later, a group of sorority girls are quickly killed off, and each of their cell phones are used to make the next creepy phone call, keeping that tie to the original. We are to assume it is Billy, since he has recently escaped the insane asylum. The ending reveals that it's not only Billy killing the women, but also his sister/daughter.
His sister-daughter?
Agnes.
So stupid.
Yeah.
So stupid. It's the most, it is so ham-fisted. It is just like.
Yes, ham-fisted is the perfect word for it.
Like, not only is the backstory told to us, but it is like shoved down our throats, like in the most explicitly obnoxious way.
It's Christmas hammed.
Yeah, it's Christmas ham-fisted.
Fisted.
It's so bad.
Well, and the fact that like he has jaundice like served no purpose, because it was like his mom was like, I don't like my child, but it straight up tells us it's not because he has jaundice and is the yellow bastard from Sin City. It's that he reminds her of
the father.
That's the reason hates him.
Yeah.
Not because he's yellow and jaundiced, but so
well,
then
like,
why? So
in any kind of way.
So why does he have jaundice? Like, why does that even fucking matter?
This is my theory. My theory is that they zeroed in on that one shot in the original where you see the killer's eye in the crack of the door, which was terrifying, by the way. I screamed. But in that shot, the eye looks kind of red and like bloodshot and very strange and not like a human. Like it looks like there's something kind of wrong. Like it doesn't look like a normal human eye. So my theory
is jaundice-y.
Yeah. So my theory is that they basically just narrowed in on that visual and they're like, why does the eye look like that? Oh, he's got jaundice. And it's like, shut up.
And then they made that his whole identity. You're right. He absolutely did look like the yellow bastard from Sin City. You're 100% right.
It was like comically yellow.
Yep.
Yes, and it added nothing to anything.
Yeah, it was just like, now that we know, okay, so I see a yellow hand, it's him. Yeah. Like, it's just weird choice.
Well, and the other reason why...
Yeah, very weird.
The other reason why I think that is because they also, like, used that eye motif, like, just overused it.
Yeah.
It was used very effectively in the first one and specifically, and then in
once,
and then in the second one, he's like peeping through holes all constantly over the house. There's like one in the floor. How is he fitting in the floorboards?
The loose tile in just, the bathroom.
He like pops like, the tile out of the bathroom holes. Floor, and it's like his eye, and it's like, get out of here.
Well, but was that him or was that Agnes?
Oh, yeah,
who the hell knows?
Who the hell does?
But also at the same time, like, no normal sized human would be able to fit between them.
Correct.
Like the floorboard.
Correct.
Let alone someone who they made Agnes... They made Agnes look to be like a hulking behemoth.
Yeah.
And yeah, it made no sense. Made no sense.
I think it was definitely... whoever played Agnes was definitely like a man in a wig, right? Like, can we all agree on that?
We'll get to that.
Oh my God, okay.
even with COVID, we're still so good at this podcast.
Well, I mean, I can just say it right now. Dean Fress was the camera focus puller for the movie. They thought he was such a very strange looking man.
Oh my God.
And cast him as Agnes.
Hey, you yoggly weirdo, wow. You want to put a wig on and play this character, this inbred psychopath?
Yeah,
why not?
That's amazing.
That was another thing. Okay, before I forget about this, the common thing in the movie is that they're pulling the eyeballs out of all their victims.
Yes.
So gruesome. Like, it is so comically violent.
Yeah.
Because the first one, you don't really see much at all. But this is just like, you're going to see people's eyeballs get ripped out over and over and over again. But then at the end, where she makes a Christmas tree with all the dead bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Decorates a Christmas tree, not with the dead bodies, not makes a tree out of it.
Yeah.
It's not bones and shit. Yeah, it's not 300. But then the tree is also littered with eyeballs. But she's been eating the eyeballs at the same time. So it was like...
She's like a little squirrel. She just puts them in her little cheek. Just puts the eyeballs in her little cheek pouch. And then, and then
multiple
pops them out
scenes
and makes
where they pop the eyeball in her mouth.
Oh, listen, I love horror movies. But just that, I don't know, like that for me is just like... really gets to me.
Oh, yeah. See, they were obsessed with the eyeballs. Somebody had an eyeball obsession.
They really zeroed in on it. Yep.
Speaking of casting, so when casting for the new Mrs. Mack, the house mother, Glenn Morgan wanted an original star, and the two obvious choices were Margot Kidder or Olivia Hussey. But he chose Andrea Martin because he was such a big fan of SCTV.
Yeah.
I did have this note in
here. Oh, wait, is that like the Canadian, like, Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
Oh, she was on that?
Yeah.
Cute.
Second City TV.
Yep. Okay, so Bob Clark served as an executive producer on the remake, and he gave Morgan no notes about where to take the story. He was just like, have at it, man. Like, do whatever you want to do. Okay, so during development, things are going well. Then the production company makes a deal with a distributor who had final say on the film. Any guesses on who that is? Which company took over? What logo did we see at the beginning of the movie?
I thought I saw like Blumhouse.
No, Blumhouse was the newest one.
No, Blumhouse was
the
2013.
Oh, the newest one.
Or 2019. Was it Dimension?
It was Dimension Films. Okay. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Weinstein.
The Weinsteins.
What? They're just all over the place.
These guys. Okay. So the Weinsteins, this is their horror division, the people that were doing the Scream movies, right?
Okay.
Yep.
So the Weinsteins tell Morgan that the version he wants to make isn't what horror films are anymore. And he needs to get with the times.
Okay.
So everything needs to be more.
More yellow.
Yeah, more yellow, more violence, more fuck it, let's have her...
More nudity. Like,
let's have him bake cookies from her flesh kind of nonsense.
So gross.
Like, just really over the top.
It doesn't need to make sense.
Yeah, exactly, right? They also say he needs to put two killers. So in his original version, it was still only Billy, but the twist that there is a second killer was forced upon him by the Weinsteins. Yeah. Morgan assumes this will be it. Like, they're going to give those a couple of notes on the screenplay going in, and the rest will be fine. Not so.
I was like, will it though?
Yeah.
Will it?
So we have some quotes here. Jenny Ray, since Clint got to be our Jerry Lewis, you are going to be our Glenn Morgan.
Okay. I felt that a $10 million movie of Black Christmas didn't need anyone's help, and they should have left us alone.
100%.
I mean, it needed like someone's help, but just not the Weinsteins. Like, it needed yeah. just generally yeah. needed a little bit of help, though.
Yeah, I have no idea what the original intention of this movie was supposed to be. But I do know of the things that were added to it.
Okay.
So who knows? It could have removed the second killer and it's still been like over the top gruesome. Who knows?
Yeah.
Production took place in Vancouver, Canada. Goes pretty well. Morgan says it was a great experience for the most part. Now, first day of filming for Lacey Chatbert was the scene crawling underneath the house. And the trap door slams too early and busts her ankle.
Oh.
Now, this is from the DVD, so take this with a huge grain of salt because it doesn't make any sense to me. They fly her to L.A., to see the doctor. So apparently they don't trust Canadian healthcare.
It's too free. Yeah. They don't like it.
They didn't accept her insurance.
Yeah. American insurance.
Oh, God damn it.
This is free. It can't possibly be quality.
She explains to the doctor that, yeah, what happened? I'm in this movie. And the doctor's like, wait. In Vancouver, are you shooting Black Christmas? And just so happens to be Katie Cassidy, who played Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
This is her stepdad. Just happens to be the doctor.
Shut up, L.A.
Oh, wow.
I this is on the DVD extra. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Why the fuck flown to L.A. to go to the emergency room. Like, I'm sorry, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
That's weird.
In that amount of time, like the swelling and possible infection.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. You know,
it's like, well, at least she's going to go in and meet with Katie Cassidy's dad.
Yeah, maybe like it was all just forced upon her.
I thought you were going to say...
This will be a good story.
I thought you were going to say that the doctor was like also trying to be an actor. I auditioned for that movie because that's like such a fucking L.A. move.
Yeah.
I just doctor in my free time, you know, yeah. trying to be an actor.
I only do it just to keep my practice up, just so I can keep my license, but I'm really an actor.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind giving this script
here's
to
my
the
headshot.
Director.
Yeah.
Here's my headshot if you want to pass it along.
Look, this one was actually from my ID badge as a doctor, so you know I can play one.
That said, she absolutely did something to her foot because all the behind the scenes stuff is her on crutches. And if you watch the movie, you'll notice that a lot that she's just standing in one place. She doesn't move a lot. So one day, someone from Dimension Films is on set. They tell Morgan that he should shoot an insert of wrapping paper on the floor next to a snow globe. Like, that would be a cool little image to throw in there. Morgan tells him they already did and describes it. The guy responds, yeah, you should do something like that. And Morgan's like, wait, confused. He's like,
we did.
So he pulls up the footage, shows it to the guy.
Yeah.
The money guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy sees it and says, yeah, you should shoot something like that for the movie. And Morgan is just like beyond himself. He's like, fucking confused and furious. He's like,
bro, yeah. I don't understand how many more ways I can tell you that, like, that's what
it's already
shot.
Done. Yes.
Yeah.
This scene I am showing you, I already filmed yes. for this movie. This is from this movie.
Yes. So the guy wouldn't stop telling him to get the shot.
Uh-huh.
So Morgan and the DP spend 30 minutes reshooting it for this idiot.
Oh my God.
This is Morgan on this.
That's one of those stories when you know, as it's happening, this is one of the all-time crazy stories. But I'm not Robert Altman or Paul Thomas Anderson, so I can't tell them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, even though you want to so bad.
Yeah.
You want to so bad.
Yeah, you don't have the clout. You can't fight the money people.
But like, how did the money guy just not understand, though? Like,
I don't know.
I get you understand money, but no, listen. Listen.
It's done.
What you're asking for... I am showing you.
Yeah. I don't
know. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
I really want that story to be true. I really hope that story is true. It's so bonkers.
I wonder if he'd framed it in like, hey, listen, if we shoot this, it's going to waste some time, which is going to waste some money. If that guy was like, oh, forget about it. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, well, we already did it. If we do it again.
Here's what it's going to cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Morgan just not say the word, I don't want to do it again? Like,
well,
we don't need to do it again.
That's what he was
like
saying.
That, just that one word, again.
Again. Yeah, that might have been the clue to him, man. What do you mean again? Yeah, I don't know. He tells
that's
this
crazy.
Story in the interview, and I was kind of like, I had follow-up questions. Like, wait a minute. Yeah. Like, what exactly were you telling this guy?
Yeah. Glenn Morgan, get in touch. We have some follow-up questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Production wraps.
Like a Christmas present.
Christmas okay. So Weinstein start testing the movie. Test audiences give a bunch of ideas that Weinsteins think are great.
Oh, no.
So... two main things.
More yellow.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite tell. Did he have jaundice? I think he needs to look more jaundicey.
Let's get him more saturated.
Listen, my brother-in-law had jaundice, and he was much more yellow than that guy.
Have you ever seen Sin City? He looks like the yellow bastard. You should make him look like the yellow
more
bastard.
More yellow.
It was scary.
Okay, so two main things. First, Morgan is told by a producer at Dimension Films that his ideas and themes are there in the movie. Like, what he was trying to accomplish makes sense and it came across. But it requires the audience to think.
Oh, no.
Oh, audiences hate that.
Yeah.
They hate thinking.
So they had to do some overall reshoots to add exposition to explain mm-hmm. everything that is going
they had to
on.
Do a, they had to do a Christmas ham reshoot.
The Christmas ham fisting.
The Christmas ham fisting.
Was that all just like the backstory stuff?
Yeah, like backstory, but even just like, we have to go under the house to fix the thing, like all that kind of stuff. Just everything. So you understood everything that was happening at any given moment, they had to put in backstory or just exposition. So... They had to do all these reshoots to explain things. This is Morgan on that decision.
That's when I knew I was fucked. This person told me they weren't in the business of expanding the genre. They're not interested in doing something new or an interesting take. They want to make money.
Yeah. And the more you explain things, the more the dumb people understand, I guess, and want to see it again? I don't know. Very, very stupid. Because... not only is Billy's backstory just like shown in explicit detail, they're also telling you like at the exact same time, like a lot of voiceover.
This isn't a college paper where you're going to tell you what we did, show you what we did, and then tell you what we showed you.
Yeah.
Like, you can just show us.
Yeah. I imagine that beginning bit in the psychiatric hospital where they're just like, that's Billy, blah, 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 and he killed his whole family, where they basically just tell you the entire
everything
story.
You need to know.
And like the prison guard is just like, by the way, random guy who wandered into this secure prison area. It's just like, what's happening right now?
It's like the scene from Wayne's World. Wow, he sure knew a lot for a security guard.
Exactly. And he just like tells some stranger who like wanders in.
Some Joe Schmo in a Santa outfit who just happened to like lose his way in this secure facility.
Into like the insane asylum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how did I get in the maximum security area? I was just looking for the kids' wing. What?
Yeah.
the kids' prison wing.
They're next door.
Yeah.
Yeah, we like to keep the kids next to the psychopath, serial killer, murderers. Don't worry about it.
Oh, man.
I'm trying to sleep. There's a man screaming.
I can see a man looking at me through a hole in the wall. I can see his eye.
Through the tile on the floor.
Is he okay? It looks like he has jaundice.
Yeah.
Okay, so secondly, the second thing they needed was that the Weinsteins forced upon him is that the ending at the hospital needed something more.
Can I guess what that more thing was?
Oh, we're going to go into every bit of it, but go ahead.
Okay. Was the more the Christmas tree impalement? That's my guess is what they said we needed to have more. It was a Christmas tree impalement.
Do you have a guess?
I just think more just means like put something at the hospital instead of ending the movie because it feels like an absolutely bullshit tacked on ending that shouldn't be there.
Which is funny because they do the same thing in Scream 4, but in Scream 4 it works.
Okay. So the last standing women are Kelly and Lee. Random fact, Lee is Glenn Morgan's wife in real life.
Oh, okay.
So Kelly and Lee, they fight off the incest siblings and then set the house on fire. They get out and go to the hospital. Okay, there are four different endings to this movie.
What?
All at the hospital. Ending number one, Kelly is brought down. I don't know why, but Kelly is brought down to see Billy's charred corpse to tell her how it's all over.
Okay.
Like, look, here's the proof.
Here's the dead body.
To further traumatize you.
Yeah. She leaves the hospital with her parents. Orderly starts cleaning up the room. The morgue guy comes down saying he's there to pick up Billy's body. And the orderly is like, wait, I thought you did that already. Camera pans up to the ceiling and we see
an eyeball.
And Billy's eye in the vent.
God damn it.
No.
Fucking eyeballs.
End of movie. Okay. Ending number two. So Kelly and Lee are in the hospital room. The darkest hospital ever. Anyway, yes. Lee opens her gift from her recently murdered sister, Claire. Then Kelly's cell phone rings. It's from Kyle's phone. Kelly's recently murdered boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
Camera pans away from the hospital.
Oh, so end very homage-y to the first one.
Correct. This is the original ending that Morgan wanted.
Check. In the can. Done. You're good.
That's a much better ending because
You're good.
It's like, ooh, what? Whoa. Like, that's more of the Inception top of like, what happened?
Exactly. At least it had something of an interesting of an ending, right?
Yeah.
But Bob Weinstein hated it, and he wanted it to be more like Hostel or Cabin Fever.
Okay.
So then get Eli Roth to direct it.
Yeah, you got the wrong guy. All right, so ending number three. Lee is asked to identify Agnes's body.
Why
whatever...
she just never met Agnes before moment.
Yeah, and every other time that she saw her face was shrouded with her ratty ass hair in the dark fucking attic.
Like, they all thought she was Billy in a wig, so like, how would you tell the difference?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the cop opens the body bag, and it's her sister, Claire, which is pretty kind of a twisted little thing. So she finally gets to see her sister's body. Or did she see it in the attic? Whatever. Anyway,
I think she saw her in the attic, yeah.
Lee goes back up to see where she's like, oh, Kelly, we got to save Kelly. Agnes kills Lee because she was hiding in the bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like how it plays out. Then Kelly kills Agnes with the defibrillator. Remember, she puts on her face and zaps her.
Right.
That was the end of the movie.
Okay.
So there's option number three. No, needs more.
More cowbell.
Ending four still wasn't enough. The biggest reshoot is the final fight, where after killing Agnes, Kelly gets into the scuffle with Billy and then throws Billy down the stairwell onto a Christmas tree impaling.
Yeah.
You.
Well that done. That was more.
That was the more. The that most. Was the more. That was the most.
The most murder.
Possible. And for people who don't care to see this movie, that is actually how it ends.
Yes.
Yep.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
So after he finishes this, he's like, okay, this is over. We're done, right? Marketing calls Morgan.
Oh, God.
Saying if it's okay if they shoot some random footage for the trailer, like close-ups on ornaments, things like that. Just kind of set up a tone of what they're trying to go
like
for.
Like a close-up of some wrapping paper next to a snow globe?
Next to a snow globe.
We already shot that!
We did that already.
I can't. How
I have two
times?
Of them. I have two of them.
Choose one.
You tell me which one you want.
So at this point, Morgan's like, fucking done. He's like, yeah, whatever. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Turns out...
Is this the prequel to Coked Out Trailer Bros?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out Bob Weinstein thinks the film needs an extra panache to help really sell it.
Je ne sais quoi, if you will.
Yeah. To audiences who are really into torture porn movies of the time, like Saw and Hostel. So let's watch this first. This is the original trailer for the movie.
15 years ago, on Christmas Eve, his family became his victims.
What have you done?
You're my family now.
Black Christmas.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now,
okay.
Now watch the second one.
Okay.
Some houses.
What have you done?
Have long memories. The girls of Delta Alpha Kappa.
Billy lived here.
Thought the legend of Billy Lenz.
Who is in my house?
Was a joke.
Well, you're definitely getting punked.
But evil still lives.
You lock up the house, stay together.
Within these walls.
Merry Christmas, Mother.
Black Christmas.
Okay.
Okay. What did we notice?
Well, the first one was like what the actual movie was, sort of.
Yeah, with a few scenes that didn't show up
with
in
a few
the
scenes that weren't in there.
The
but like it was at least the story, right? Where it's like he killed his family, he's back, he's whatever. And the second one was more like the house. Like it was more of a trapped in the house kind of slasher.
Well, yeah. More importantly, all that stuff like Michelle Trachtenberg with the shotgun.
Right.
Merry Christmas.
It was not in there.
And there's another shot of her running around with the shotgun. Like that's not in the movie at all.
Right.
Neither is the girl in the eyes plus her hand out.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So all of these things are all things that they filmed just for the trailers. Okay.
Yeah.
Lacey Chabert being dragged toward a Christmas light grinding device.
That's what
thing.
I was going to say. Like they made it almost. They made it look like a Saw type thing where it's
exactly.
Like, he'd like booby trapped. It's like Saw meets Home Alone with like booby trapped the house.
Yeah.
I was like, no, he was just like killing people and poking their eyeballs out. Like, very straightforward.
It's really funny that you say that, Ray, because there is this recent like fan theory that Jigsaw is Kevin McAllister all grown up.
I believe that.
Yeah, that's like a recent thing like this holiday season I've seen.
Other things, Billy seemingly floating on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like like, there's just that shot of him just like floating, like it's just like,
like Spider-Manning to the ceiling.
Yeah, but he's like not even holding on. It's just like he's like he's possessed. Like it's more supernatural than it actually is.
Yeah.
And an entire new character, not in the movie. You see her falling off the roof, who also finds a dead body under the ice of a lake, and then the corpse's hand like breaking through the ice as she screams. All of that. Like that was just nonsense that they filmed for the trailer.
That's wild.
But it also is like completely like how do you again have Billy floating like a demon and then having a body that's breaking out of the ice? Like those are supernatural things.
Yeah.
And it's just completely nonsense.
They're just like, listen, you guys, we were like really into supernatural stuff right now. Well, what if we like shot him on the ceiling floating? Well, that's the coolest idea I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was like, you know what I also love? Those scenes like when you like put the ice away and their eyes open up. Like, whoa, what the hell's that? And they stand out. Yeah.
Oh, you know what would be badass? You know what would be badass? If she was like, Merry Christmas, motherfucker. Oh, shit. Oh,
I don't know. It's seriously like it's one thing to just kind of show random shit. Like I don't know, that seems like it would be a deleted scene. It's quite another to the completely change the idea of what the movie actually is.
Yeah.
I do love this little fact, however, is that when we were talking about misleading trailers, that so many people remembered this and brought it to your attention, like that they were so mad.
Yeah,
that Black Christmas, like
lying. It's just straight up lying about what that movie is.
Yeah, but Black Christmas, they've messed, like that trailer messed with me for the last 15, 20 years or whatever it is.
So but disappointed.
That's just such an early 2000s. Like this movie is so, it's like a perfect little time capsule of like all the like bullshit that was like wrong with movies in the early
2000s.
Yeah.
The things that they thought they could get away with.
Yeah.
And the common denominator of all that is the white
state. Yeah, right?
Oh, boy. Yep.
So, last situation that Morgan had to deal with, even though this is still not over for him. Glenn Morgan was adamant that the movie come out before Christmas because the day after, everyone has moved on. Like, as soon as after Christmas, everybody's moved on to the next thing. But it's the lead up to that everybody gets excited for.
Right.
But the Weinsteins wanted it to be released on Christmas Day. One thing that test audiences were asked that Morgan deliberately put into the questionnaire was if they'd see the movie on Christmas Day. Nobody raised their hand. And Morgan felt vindicated.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, okay, cool. But the Weinsteins wouldn't budge. Morgan?
Their argument was they weren't going to take the marketing advice of 20 random people, even though they did that for the creative notes. Yes, exactly. I was just going to make that exact point. Like, so they care about the random opinion of 20 people in every single other situation, except for when it comes to this one thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the plebs don't understand.
Oh, I would be furious if I was Glenn Morgan. Furious!
Man.
I would be furious.
The double standard, man. The hypocrisy.
So, the fact that it was released on Christmas Day, coincidentally, Christian rights groups began protesting such a violent film being released on Christmas. As a reminder, this is about the time when these groups were furious that Walmart started saying Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas.
They're furious all the time about everything.
The thing we hear every fucking year on Fox News and whatnot is you're going to be able to say Merry Christmas again. That kind of bullshit.
The war on Christmas.
And it's still happens 15 years later, whatever. So, Clint, you are going to be our three random Christian rights groups characters.
Oh my God.
So I'm going to give you prompt you with each individual and then give us three different religious zealots. All right. The first one is Kira McCaffrey, the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights.
Christmas is one of our holiest of days. It is galling that the movie industry would try to destroy the true meaning of Christmas by releasing a horror film on that day.
Okay, this is Robert Marley, co-founder of the Coalition to Save Christmas.
It's another strike against Christmas. It's in bad taste. Not only does it send a bad message, it's further the degradation of our holiday.
And this is Michelle Combs from the Christian Coalition.
It's a disgrace. The movie industry has really gone too far.
Michelle's my favorite.
Thank you.
This old biddy.
Yeah, she's really soft-spoken, but man, you get her into like a cage match, she will fuck you
Yeah, she
up.
Will drop some racist shit.
She's gonna thump you with the Bible so hard.
From the top rope.
Lastly, sensing that the film was a bit schizophrenic, an interviewer asked Morgan if he was happy with the final film.
No way. And it's schizophrenic because Bob Weinstein came in and urinated on it. It was humiliating. It was horrible. I stayed to try and protect the cast and crew, friends of mine, and ended up taking it on the chin. Oof. Oh, man. I have a lot of respect for this guy, actually. I'm just like,
yeah,
dude, that sucks. Like, I'm not saying the movie would have been like 100 times better with, you know, sans like Weinstein meddling or anything. Like, maybe it also would have been like a pretty bad movie, but I have a lot of respect for people who are like, I'm just going to stick this shit out because I'm trying to like protect the people who are working, who like are working
we
their
did
asses.
All the hard work. Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing all this hard work to try to make this movie. And like, I'm here to be like a Weinstein buffer.
Yeah.
That's how I am when I like work on things. I just like throw my whole body. I sacrifice my body for the cause.
Yeah.
Every time I leave here, I don't know if I'm coming back. I would never get to do this again and not get to work with all these wonderful people and come back to this pretty great city. This movie makes no money. I'm on film jail death row. I'm Ted Bundy.
Black Christmas was released on Christmas Day 2006. On a budget of $9 million, it grossed $16 million in the U.S., $5 million international. So $21 million worldwide. So it made its budget back,
it
but
money.
It was not much. It wasn't really
it wasn't
a hit.
Wasn't a hit, yeah.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes, 14% with critics, 38% with audiences.
Yeah, fine. That I don't feel the need to watch it ever again.
Yeah, well, it's not that great of a movie.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But, okay, some random facts here. Writer-director Glenn Morgan and producer James Wong are writing partners. They wrote the original Final Destination and the Jet Li action movie, The One.
Ooh.
What they are mostly known for is their work on The X-Files. Very infamously, they wrote the episode Home. About,
oh, shit.
About the terrifying peacock family barricaded in a dilapidated house in Pennsylvania.
I've seen this episode.
Yeah. It's revealed.
Yeah, they won't show it anymore.
Yeah. It's revealed that the three brothers had an incestuous relationship with their mother.
People are obsessed with it.
And they've been in breeding for decades.
Yes, I remember this episode.
The mother is played by Karen Koneval, who also plays Billy's mother.
Shut up.
Oh my gosh.
So she gets typecast.
She just got typecast. Look, you look like
as
you
the
would
incestuous
be,
mother.
You look like you're an incestuous mom. She's like, thank you. I guess I'll take the job.
Yeah. Okay. You say so.
Morgan and Wong returned to executive produce the X-Files revival in 2016. Morgan has not done a film since. And has stuck to television. His most recent thing is he helped produce the Twilight Zone remake with Jordan Peele.
Oh, for Paramount Plus? Yeah, I watched a few of those.
This was the last film by composer Shirley Walker. Because of her years working under Danny Elfman, especially 1989's Batman, This led her to being the main composer on Batman, the animated series.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
She also worked on Batman Beyond, a personal favorite of mine. I love the score from that show. She died from a stroke at 61.
Aww. Oh,
25 geez. Days before Black Christmas was released. Due to her plethora of uncredited work and being one of the very few female composers in Hollywood, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers created the Shirley Walker Award to honor those whose achievements have contributed to the diversity of film and television music.
That's way cool.
Nice.
This was also the last film for Bob Clark, who died in a car crash along with his son in April of 2007.
Oh, man.
He was 67.
Jeez. Now, you know, there's going to probably be some people out there, especially maybe like on Reddit, who are like, the Black Christmas curse.
Yeah, maybe. The curse of Black Christmas.
Okay, before we jump into the 2019 remake, was Black Christmas 2006 worth it?
No, I don't think so. Just, it felt pretty much like just another kind of crappy horror movie that was coming out in that time of crappy horror movies. It's just like we said, super ham-fisted exposition, like overly violent, just kind of dumb, didn't really add anything to the genre, didn't build on anything that the first movie was trying to establish. It just kind of like took the idea and made it worse. And it sounded like, you know, Glenn Morgan and whoever else like didn't have a great time making this. I mean, we didn't hear from any of the actresses if they had a bad time. So I'm assuming like it was okay for them, but it's not like it, like most of the people in that movie aren't huge stars because of that movie, right?
Yeah.
Like I was like shocked. I was like, oh shit, like Michelle Trachtenberg is in this? Like, because Buffy made her huge. So it's not like it did anything for anybody's careers necessarily.
Right.
So yeah. I'm just going to say no, because it feels like just kind of like, whoop, whoop, like movie that just came and went,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For sure. Very Mother's Flesh cookie cutter, right?
Yes.
But I completely agree with your assessment. Yeah, it was, I was really excited to watch a horror movie, for it was a shit show, and now I'm regretting it. So,
but you know, if this is your favorite Christmas movie, you absolute weirdo, please let us know. Yeah. You know, throw us a comment. We'd love to know whose favorite Christmas movie this is.
Yeah, agree. What was the point? It just got railroaded and was just fucking insane.
Well, there's remakes out there of horror movies that either are just as good, if not just like slightly like worse, right? And but they'll kind of help establish things going forward. Like it'll be someone's favorite version of that, and that, you know, that makes sense, because I know there's a lot of people out there who like Rob Zombie's Halloween more than John Carpenter's. I personally don't. I think they're dumb.
Yeah,
but I know there's people out there, and that's totally fine. I don't, you know, I'm not saying that it's, I mean, they stand on their own 2 feet and not have to do anything. But with this Black Christmas, it just seems just like a waste. Because you could take the 1974 Black Christmas and make it
terrifying,
a little more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like make it more modern, scarier.
Yeah. And no one has just done that yet. So.
Yeah, still.
Yeah, this one wasn't. This one wasn't. Yeah.
Still forebode.
Well, the good segue, because in 2019, Blumhouse Productions made another remake. This one directed by Sophia Tikal, written by Tikal and April Wolfe. Tikal said she wanted to make a very feminist movie where the women weren't objectified. Rumor was that the movie had nearly 20 to 30 minutes cut. This is unconfirmed. However, it was originally rated R.
Ah! That would have made it so much better!
But it cut down to PG-13. This is co-writer April Wolfe about that decision.
Here's the deal. We wrote it with an R in mind. When they did the test screenings, it was clear that this movie needed to be available to a younger female audience because the subject matter is timely. Also, I want to indoctrinate girls into horror. Doesn't make it any less vicious. Yes, it does. Look, listen, I understand wanting to make it available to a younger female audience, but like, what does younger mean here? Because even in its current iteration, like, I'm not showing this to like a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that too, because Blumhouse has done a pretty good job of making some horror films PG-13 that are appropriate for children, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least fans of horror who want their kids to be fans of it as well, and especially if their kids are interested, because Blumhouse did Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's my son Q's like favorite franchise. That he just loves the lore of it. We saw Five Nights at Freddy's. He loved it. Mm-hmm. It was a nice horror movie for, you know, good kids. Introduction for kids. Same with Megan. Like Blumhouse did Megan.
Oh, and I yeah. Show Megan's fun.
Q, I want to show Q Megan. Megan's a hell of fun.
Yeah.
Horror movie for kids.
Yeah, this is
just a weird sentence to say.
You twisted,
it's a super
motherfucker.
Fun horror movie for kids.
I know, it's true. It's true.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you though. There's just this isn't the one. Like this isn't the one that's
yeah.
So give it more teeth, make it more bloody, make it a little more R-rated, which you can do without having it just be like gratuitous, you know, violence against women and stuff. Like if you want to keep your feminist message. And then it's for kind of a bit older of an audience, but still like kind of older teen college age, which is like feels more appropriate anyway.
Yeah.
No, we talked about how this movie, like we could tell that it had been edited to be PG-13 because they did weird things with the blood where it wasn't red. And we were like, wait, and it's like they made it black. And like, I wonder if that's where like the stupid supernatural bullshit came from. This movie was a mess. I did.
Well, yeah. Okay. Before we jump into that real quick, Black Christmas released on December Friday, the 13th, 2019. On a budget of $5 million, it grossed $18 million worldwide. So again, not much.
Yeah, like pretty similar to the 2006, where it's like it made some money, but not crazy.
40% Rotten Tomatoes with critics, 31% with audiences. Thoughts on Black Christmas 2019. I was surprised. I wasn't planning to watch this. And then Jenny Ray was like, no, we got to watch it because I got to see how they're going to change this up again.
Yeah. And I was like, I need to experience the evolution of this movie and it through to the end and see like what they do with it. And he's like, are you sure? We really don't have to. And I was like, look, I'm in this far, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do it.
And Clint, you said that you watched all three and said that they were, I was like, is it, diminishing returns on them. And I could not believe that it was going to be worse than the 2006 version, but it is. It is garbage.
It's a garbage movie.
I commend the director and the writer for doing the theme that they wanted to do. I am completely 100% behind that. But I feel like there's a better way that they could have done it that still made it a good horror movie.
Yeah, the execution was 100% fucking awful.
There was one kill that I really did like where one of the gals walking around the house looking for that dumb cat again. Everybody's looking for the stupid ass cat in all these movies. And she walks from one room like to like the other hall, and then all of a sudden the killer like comes up behind her with a bag. I was like, that's actually a pretty effect. It reminded me of the scene in Exorcist 3.
Yeah, that was a direct homage to Exorcist 3. Well caught.
Oh, well done.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost exactly the exact same cadence where it's just a single shot sequence. And then it holds there for a long period of time. And then that moment.
The killer, yeah.
And then it zooms in real quick. Exorcist 3, terrifying. That moment, I saw it coming. I was like, this is very Exorcist 3. And then it happened.
Yeah. It happened, yeah.
But no,
That was my favorite character, too. I'm really sad we didn't see more of her.
Sassy Jewish
gal who just puts a diva cup in front of her friend. Love that.
Yeah.
Love that character.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say that of the three, I think I liked the second one the most.
Whoa.
I think the first one is really good at setting up that kind of suspension and dread, but it drags and it is boring and the characters aren't really interesting and they're not active. They're not active. Just shit just happens to them and they're not paying attention. And so they don't know that something is going on until the last like 5-10 minutes of that movie where it finally goes, oh shit, something is happening. Like nothing is ever told. And the characters are never like pushed to do something. And so I liked in the second one that they were actually active, that they were actually trying to get stuff. Like there was all that shit. It was like, no, don't you, we better not split up. Like, and they got in a whole argument about that. Like, but the fact that it was so fucking insane and over the top made it way more entertaining to me. It'd be a really great bad movie watching experience because it is so stupid and is so over the top that at least it was entertaining in that sense.
I think I would probably agree with your assessment. I like the first one for the killer POV aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Like I thought that was that I really gravitated towards that, which is probably not the right words to say.
really gravitated. I really understood. It like put me in the headspace of the murderer, and I just really related to that.
Yeah,
really, I really like
because when I do it, I'm just sensing myself doing it. Oh,
yeah.
Whoops!
I mean, yeah, but because I think it opened up the door for a lot of other horror movies to do the same thing that it did, but kind of in a better way. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate it for its like not groundbreaking isn't the right word, but like the first to do it sort of thing. Because because John Carpenter took it for Halloween, did great. Wes Craven did it for Scream, and it was great. Another a bunch of other examples too. But I think you're right. Like it was a little bit like it was boring. I remember watching it thinking, oh, I've got to be finished with this movie by now, right? And I still had like another 40 minutes. Like, oh my God, they're still doing something that's not relevant to what we're watching. Yeah. And so I think I agree with you there. And I was really kind of excited to see the 2019 one. Because I remember seeing a trailer for it in 2019. I'm like, oh, I should watch that. I like horror movies. And it's a remake of the original that I still haven't seen. Maybe I'll watch all three. And I didn't have to until recently. But I remember seeing the trailer and then watching the movie. I'm like, man, talk about misleading trailers. I was excited for this in 2019. And then 5 years later, I'm like, this is really bad.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, I liked them in the order in which they were made. And I get what you mean about like the first one being a little bit slow and kind of plotting and that they weren't particularly active, which was very annoying. Like I said, I was like screaming, bitch, get out of the house, like over and over again when she was just sitting there listening to him on the phone. And then the police specifically called her and they're like, look, we're going to tell you what's going on. The person who is calling you is inside your home. Please like calmly exit and we will be there to save you. And then she's just like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go upstairs and look for my friends. And yeah. I was like, bitch, don't do it. If they're still alive, the police will find them. Like, I was like so fucking pissed that the police are just like, listen, do exactly like as we say. And she's like, I'm going to do none of what you just said and do the exact opposite. I was so annoyed. Yeah. But I was legitimately more scared by the first one. Like, that shot of the eyeball on the door frame, like, I like jumped and like, that was scary as shit.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just like, over and over and over, like hitting you with just like more kills and more kills. And like the second one was a lot more expected, but it is definitely more of a fun, bad movie. Yeah. Like it's more enjoyable to watch if you're like watching with friends to like have a bad movie night.
Yeah,
it's way
for sure.
More fun.
Yeah.
Drinking game.
Drink every time the girl who's always drunk drinks.
Yeah.
Eat a big juicy grape anytime somebody's eyeballs are plucked out of their skull.
Yep.
Yeah, you should have boba. Have boba for while you watch
the popping
movie.
Boba. Yes.
Take a big swig of your juicy boba every time an eyeball is squished.
Okay, so follow-ups. Go ahead, Jenny Ray.
Okay, our first follow-ups, we have some comments from the Brothers Grimm episode. A lot of people commented saying how much this movie scarred them as kids.
Yeah.
Which I get it.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's one of those things where we were talking about like Surviving Christmas about people who were just like, this was my favorite movie.
This
where
was my
I watched this a lot when I was a kid.
Christmas movie. This was people's like maybe first kind of horror. Speaking of child-friendly horror films, you know, because there is some scary imagery in it, so I get it.
Yeah,
that gingerbread kid. Man.
Terrifying. Okay, so we got this comment on Spotify. They said, I just want to give credit to Clint for his Goodwill hosing joke, but it clearly went unheard by the group. It did. It did during recording, but when we were listening back later during editing, I was like, wait a minute.
We were cutting the teaser.
That's right.
We were cutting the teaser and we needed a good joke to end on. And then we discovered that you said
Goodwill hosing.
I call this a goodwill hosing. Because we neither of us heard that joke. And so if you watch the teaser trailer, it ends with just you. And we did a really pretty like fancy editing to make it so only you could be heard.
Oh man.
Cause during the recording, like it went unheard in the like general calamity of us talking over each other. But anyway, well done. Congratulations.
I feel vindicated. I feel vindicated. Thank you.
And then we had OG fan of the pod, Vicky Spranger, our good friend Vicky, comment on Spotify and say, wait, you can comment on Spotify podcasts? I learned so much from this episode. Yes, Vicky, you can, and you did, and thank you for that. So, yeah.
I hope your Wordle is going well, Vicky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the day the clown cried, the exact video that Ian watched, the one that like mysteriously disappeared from the internet that we were all freaking out about, the one that showed the majority of the movie without the audio, was reposted by somebody else shortly after the episode. So it is now pinned to our YouTube page if you want to watch it before it's gone, maybe before the ghost of Jerry Lewis takes it down again.
Finds that one too. Yeah, a lot of people found that same thing. And it was it was between the time between where we recorded and when we posted, someone put that back up. And completely different YouTube account, and it's the exact same title. So it exists again. And so if you go to the YouTube episode for The Day the Clown Cried, you can pull it up. See if it's still there. I don't know. I should probably check on it and then remove it once it's gone.
Hurry before the ghost of Jerry Lewis finds us and finds out. But yeah, thanks to all the people who sent us that YouTube link.
Yeah, for sure.
The ghost of Jerry Lewis. I love it so much.
And there were just like so many people giving me shit, well, giving us shit, Clint, about making fun of Ian for saying down Periscope. He's like fist pumping right now. He feels vindicated.
Vindicated.
So many people were
right,
like, how dare you?
You're wrong.
Yeah. They're like, how dare you? Down Periscope is a classic. So don't worry. I have since watched Down Periscope. It's fine. It's a fine movie.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's definitely, I expected it, based on how people were talking about it, I expected it to be as spoofy as Airplane, and it's not. It's like a little bit more serious. It still has like that kind of like absurd humor, but also like it's more serious.
Oh, I mean, it's just a very straight comedy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, anyway. The plot is important. And...
It's fine, people, but listen, I hear you. You all love Down Periscope.
We get it.
We get it.
But thank you for all the people who came up to back for me on that.
Lots of defenders of Ian.
You guys roasted me good, and I was not expecting that.
We have a review highlight. So Sneaky Ferris left us a review on Apple Podcasts, and Sneaky Ferris says, Clint is the third heat. Where's the Clint episode? The fans demand it, Clint.
They demand it. Are they demanding, is the exact thing they're demanding is me do the research and do an episode like the the Star Trek one that Ian wanted me to? Okay, all right. Okay, listen.
Once you're done with the book,
once I'm done with this book, right? I might have some downtime to maybe start doing that. I'm not going to give anybody a guarantee or a promise, but it is something that I would like to do because it does seem like it'd be a lot of fun.
Coming 2026.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
if we're still relevant, then.
Yep. Coming soon. And soon is relative.
So last thing I want to mention is just Spotify Wrapped. We had a lot of people on Instagram and other platforms share that we were on their Spotify Wrapped lists, which is very exciting. So thank you, everybody who listened to us over 2023 and shared your Wrapped list. I didn't realize this either, but as a podcast, you can get your own Spotify Wrapped list like for your podcast. Ooh. So it like shows you all the data from the year
all
for
the
like
stats.
Your podcast. Yeah. So I have a couple of the stats here that I just wanted to run through because I think they're interesting. So we were a top 10 podcast for 3,201 fans.
Jeez.
A top five podcast for 2,080 fans.
Cool.
And a number one podcast on Spotify Wrapped for 443 fans. So
who are you people? You're crazy. Why do you listen to
who
us?
Who are you? You 443 of our closest acolytes.
It's the third heat, baby.
So our number one episode of 2023 was Rogue One, interestingly enough.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that was listened to by more, like people were really listening to that? Okay.
It was just the most listened to. So it was probably like a lot of new people going, what's this about? And like coming in and listening to it.
Gotcha.
And then maybe they continued or didn't continue, but that was just like the most listened to episode. And it said our listeners went up by 88%. Most new listeners by country. Number one was the U.S. then the UK, then Australia, then Canada, and then Ireland, which absolutely makes sense based on the people that we talk to in our Discord and online.
Yeah.
Who are mostly people from the UK, Australia, Canada, and Ireland.
Yeah.
And the US.
Well, I mean, I did get an email from somebody from Russia.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
Our most shared episode was Barbie.
Interesting. Shared.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. So for whatever that's worth, that was kind of interesting. And then our rating is 4.8.
Whoa.
Woo.
Out of 10.
Yeah, out of 10. No. Oh, God. Yeah. If it was out of 10, I'd be like, look, we're packing this up.
Yeah.
Well, we're done.
All right. Thanks. Thanks to all 443 from Ingress to Top 100. This is the last episode.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the Spotify Wrapped Roundup.
Cool.
Okay, should we jump into our Patreon shout out?
Let's do it.
Beep, 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 beep. This just in.
You got our trades.
Our trades. The trades have come in, and we have four new meddling executives that we need to tell some flattering lies about. So, yeah, our first new meddling executive is this person who's just kind of putting it all out there, just saying who they are as a meddling executive. You know, Evil Jared 5K.
Now, is it 5K like that's what they run? Like they're like a 5K runner?
Or they have $5,000 to give and they're just like, who wants this money? I'm a meddling executive. Show me what you got. I'm Evil Jared. 5K!
Well, they want to give... So yeah, Evil Jared, when they want to give money to a particular project, they always, in their screen name, will just tack on exactly how much they want to give. So, you know, for ours, it's like Evil Jared, 5K to the shit show. Yeah. Some organizations, 2K.
or it's like to let people know how much money they have to meddle with.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's like creators have to fight to the death.
It's like a bidding war.
A bidding war.
Jared knows that no problem cannot be solved with $5,000. You can just easily change people's
solve any
minds.
Problem.
Yeah. Any problem. Yeah. Minimum 5K.
Slip some 5K here at the end of my username. Watch that problem go away. All right. Here's another 5K.
Yeah. And then maybe instead of saying, putting your name as Evil Jared, be Benevolent Jared.
All right. Our next meddling executive here is Jameson. a whiskey magnate. We've got a whiskey magnate giving us some of those whiskey dollars.
That's right. And they deliver it to us in barrels. So they'll roll it to us.
Yes.
We have to tap it. It's just sitting in our basement, keeping cold.
Yeah, they don't pay us in money. They pay us in barrels of whiskey, which listen, as Jameson is one of my favorite whiskeys, so much appreciated.
So it's like it's more than its weight in gold. Like,
Yeah.
We're just going to open up a speakeasy.
That'd be rad.
Thanks for those whiskey dollars, Jameson. We much appreciate it.
Yep.
I'm booze hammered bucks. All the time.
Booze bucks. Oh, well done.
I just come down here and fill just... my beer helmet.
He just stumbles around. He's like, we're going to talk about this movie.
I'm too drunk to do Star Trek.
Let's make Clint do it. All right. Next up, we have Michael L.
Michael L., truth be told, is the world's premier blacksmith. This guy can craft anything out of any sort of metal, and he is making all of those. He's making the metal money for us and sending it our way.
He's just sending us coins.
He's just smithing us like antique like Roman coins, which are probably worth a lot, to be honest.
Yeah, they're indistinguishable from the real thing, so it might be counterfeit. But yeah, he just knows how to press that metal, heat it up just right, boom, stamps it. We got some gold doubloons, you know, pirate booty. We got, those Roman coins. He's also been scouring all of the fountains and just taking all the coins from there, all the wishes that the children have been making, melting them down and making more coins for us. Making that metal money,
and we legitimately don't know how much he's giving to the podcast because
these coins fluctuate. It's just in loose change.
And it's just a jar. Loose
change. Yep.
And the value of counterfeit doubloons is just so erratic. You know, it's more unstable than crypto, to be honest with you.
Up and down. Yep.
Sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes it's could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. So. It's you know, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, he could be Michael 5K. He could be Michael 100K. We just don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know the resell.
But there is value in tangibility.
Yes.
Right.
If we bury enough of these in our backyard, then like come the inevitable heat death of the universe / apocalypse, you know, we're gonna have all of this coinage that we can then trade and barter for whatever. So
yeah.
You know, we're set. We're set thanks to Michael L.
And we know when it's one of his packages, as soon as you pick that up, you're like, Jesus Christ, this is heavy.
Just straight to the ground. Just ka-dunk.
We're being sued by the Postal Service for workers' comp. They're getting injured on the job, lugging those coins up to the house.
Anyway, thanks for that metal money. Thanks for that coin cash, Michael L. It is much appreciated. All right. Ian, hit us up. Who is the next meddling executive?
Our last one for today is Trond. Like, true story, they are a cartoonist from Norway.
Wow. Norway!
And I...
Wait. Are you saying all of our other meddling executive stories aren't true?
They're totally true.
There's probably an air of probability in some of them.
Yeah.
Like, we have no way of confirming.
Yeah, we are. We're just take them at their word. But Jenny Ray, she follows this account called Cheap Old Houses.
Cheap Old Houses, and cheap I also follow. Cheap,
so do I.
I also follow Cheap Old Houses Abroad and Cheap Cottages. I'll send him a post, and it's this gorgeous cottage in the middle of like the beautiful Norwegian countryside, and it's like fucking 39,000 euro or some shit. I'm just like, I'll buy this cottage right now.
Listen, cash.
Like cash.
I got a bunch of coins.
Here's the cash. Yeah. I have all these coins, these antique doubloons, like sold. And I'm just like, bro, are we about to move to Norway right now? So anyway, my point is, I really want to move to Norway. So Trond, please, will you sponsor us?
I think we will come do the podcast from Norway. Actually, Trond's doing. They're the ones sending you all these fucking leads.
Yes, he's
trying to get us to move there.
Look, Trond is trying to incept me to moving to the Norwegian countryside, and it is working. So well done. So coming at you soon probably is going to be It Was a Shit Show, the Norway edition.
Norwegian.
Yeah. I don't speak Norwegian, but like just the fact that I'm physically in the country is going to be, you know, part of it.
What's shit in Norse? What is that? Yeah.
I don't know, but Trond will tell us. Trond,
there you go.
Let us know how you say shit in Norwegian.
I wish Trond would send us a little bit better of listings, because I swear to God, every one of those you send is like the nearest hospital, 6 hours away.
Yeah.
Bro, Norway is a huge country, okay? And it's like half of it is like beautiful wilderness. So,
well, listen. I mean, if you're going to have to like sustain yourself like for like heat, does that mean that like you guys are going to have to go out and like chop wood yourself? Like if you're on the countryside or?
Yeah, we are. It's going to be we're going to be so cottagecore. It's going to be beautiful. I'm going to live my like best. Have you heard of cottagecore?
No.
Look, we'll talk about it after.
Okay. That's amazing.
Do coins burn? Are they a good fuel source?
No, but we can go into the village and use them to trade for like chickens and like, you know, those like things of fish and like a little thing of milk that the milkmaids just like freshly. This is how I imagine Norway is in my
mind.
This
18th century still.
It is 1600s
you're going to like do a bunch of trading in silver pentagar, Viking coins.
Yeah, exactly.
And with all our coins, and they're just like, Jesus, these guys are millionaires.
Look, those coins and whiskey are really going to come in handy in my new cottage life in Norway, okay?
That's what the name of your cottage podcast is going to be, is Coins and Whiskey.
Going to do a little cottage core Norway podcast?
Yep.
I love it. Okay, well, really looking forward to that.
Thank you, Trond. Thank you, Trond, for incepting my wife. And being a patron.
And being a patron, yes, more importantly.
Thank you for that.
All right. Well, thanks to all of our newest meddling executives, and thanks everybody once again for listening. And happy holidays. We will be back at you next year with some
We're going to say Merry episodes. Christmas again. This year, we're going to say Merry Christmas again.
Look, as a member of the Christian Coalition, we need to save Christmas.
There's an attack on all of us Christians.
Michelle, who let you in here? Michelle, get out.
I've been hiding in your Christmas tree.
Have you not seen my jaundiced eyeball?
Thank you so much for listening. It Was a Shit Show is researched and produced by me, Ian Jench. Sound editing and mix by Ray Reynolds. Our theme music is by Ryan K. Hudson. Wardrobe provided by Clint's Closet. If you're enjoying the show, you can support us on Patreon or help spread the word by leaving a review and forcing your friends and family to listen. And if you have a shit show suggestion, find us on social media at It Was a Shit Show, but shit without the I. You can also find all these episodes on our YouTube channel.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.